also welcome to the Department of Police, the Civilian Secretariat, State Law Advisor. Also welcome to the media, civil society organizations. You're very much welcome. Colleagues, today we're really going to process legislation, one of the main tasks of portfolio committees and parliament as such. This morning we're going to start with a critical infrastructure bill, protection bill. Members will remember that yesterday we received a briefing document from the department and the drafting team on the opinion that we received from council and also the suggestions to deal with possible defects. I will also allow members, if there's any further questions on that document, you're very much welcome to engage. Members, then we will proceed to go through the amendments that is being put before the committee. If there's agreement on that, of course, we will vote on those after 12 and then give an opportunity for them to print the final version. So that is more or less the morning program. Of course, there will be some time lapses because we need to give an opportunity to the Secretariat to ensure that the printers deal with the relevant documents and there's the necessary editing, proofreading, and certification. Then, honourable members, we will also, in the second half of the program today, deal with the IPET Amendment Bill. The legal advisor will present us with the updated bill. I think there was a version circulated yesterday, but I think there was some technical error, so that will be replaced. So that will be that briefing will be happening after 12, and then we'll also process that specific bill and also give an opportunity for the report by the committee to be finalised, and then of course we will process that as well. So members, in terms of the question Honourable Bele raised yesterday, I think if we work together as a team, we can finish proceedings today, so tomorrow won't come into play. So I think I'm quite confident we will be able to deal with it. The big thing is that there will be some time lapses to give the administration and the legal advisors opportunity to finalise the final product and also the committee report. But members, we will ensure that there's enough tea available during the day. So members, that's more or less our program for the day. Without further ado, I'm going to give Brigadier van der Walt an opportunity to go through the amendments. But members, is there any questions on the briefing document? Members will remember we received this document yesterday. If there's anything members want to raise, they're very much welcome. If there's not at this stage, we will then go directly to Brigadier van der Walt. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honourable members. My apologies for being late this morning and making you wait. I really am sorry about that. Chairperson, the first, maybe I can just explain. The process is that this document that was handed out to you is a working document, and what we did was to insert the amendments that were already voted on, and those will be in blue, and the amendments that are proposed, those will be in red. And wherever it was possible within the text, we indicated which words or which numbers, etc., were struck out. The first issue is, of course, the arrangement of sections 16 to 20 in the index, but I'm not going to dwell on that. Then when you look at the definitions, honourable members, the first definition that was amended is critical infrastructure, and that was a consequential reference that was amended. Critical infrastructure complex, the same. Government infrastructure, Also the same issue where the, just the numbering was amended. Risk category, also just the references that were amended. When we get to the definition of security measures, the honourable members will recall that we yesterday talked about the more narrow definition for purposes of section 26.2. In other words, the subject to section 26.2, the definition of security measures is also a consequential amendment. The next amendment we will find in clause 4. I'm just scrolling through the document quickly. On the screen there, the honourable members will see clause 4, subclause 7A, the word gazette was in was italicized. The next amendment is in clause 5. This was an amendment that was voted on previously, where the word or was struck out from paragraph E, and the words a position or were struck out from paragraph F. Then when we get to clause 7, once again the consequential amendments were made there in paragraph B 1 and 2. Clause 7 2, consequential amendments also made in subclause 2, paragraph A, B, D. Then in subclause 6, paragraph C, there is a amendment that the members already voted on the previous occasion, and the consequential amendment there at the 17.8b is of course a new amendment. Clause 9, subclause 3, the word applications was made singular, and that was an amendment that was already voted on. Then clause 11, 1B, the word assessment was inserted after physical security just to ensure that there's a consistency throughout the bill with the words physical security assessment. And then clause 17.5C, Roman 1, is a consequential amendment, and the department will propose that the words or any subsequent physical security assessment is inserted there. This insertion is to ensure that an inspector who conducts a critical infrastructure will be able to refer to all the assessments that were made, the physical security assessments that were made at the critical infrastructure during the existence of this critical infrastructure. The next clause is clause 12.6. The word or assistance was inserted after advice in clause subclause 6. That was already voted on a previous occasion. Then clause 14, the delegation of powers, those are subsequential or consequential amendments rather of the insertions that are proposed or the amendments that are proposed. then when we get to clause 16, this is the first clause in chapter 3 that was amended, and the idea with this clause is to set out the objective requirements for the declaration of infrastructure as critical infrastructure as a result of the legal opinions that were received. So 16.1 provides that infrastructure qualifies for declaration as critical infrastructure if A, the functioning of such infrastructure is essential for the economy, national security, public safety, and the continuous provision of basic public services. B, the loss, damage, disruption, or immobilization of such infrastructure may severely prejudice the functioning or stability of the Republic. 2, the public interest with regard to safety and the maintenance of law and order. And 3, national security. A and B was, of course, extracted from the previous 16.2 that the minister had to consider. In this clause, however, these are requirements that that infrastructure must comply with before the application is even made. So these are the objective criteria, objective requirements, and then in subclause 2, we set out the criteria. Subclause 2 reads, in determining whether the qualifying requirements contemplated in subsection 1 are met, one or more of the following criteria must be applied. And then these criteria must be applied during the consideration by the council and, of course, also the minister before it is declared. And this was done, clause 16 as background. The members will recall that in the beginning during the public hearings, one of the submissions made was that there would be a creeping, so-called creeping of critical infrastructure, that there will be more and more and more critical infrastructure declared, but this clause will certainly limit the type of infrastructure that may be declared. The criteria was extracted from the old clause 17 and reads as follows. A, the infrastructure must be of significant economic, public, social, or strategic importance. B, the Republic's ability to function, deliver basic public services, or maintain law and order may be affected if a service rendered by the infrastructure is interrupted or if the infrastructure is destroyed, disrupted, degraded, or caused to fail. C, interruption of a service rendered by the infrastructure or the destruction, disruption, degradation, or failure of such infrastructure will have a significant effect on the environment, the health or safety of the public, or any segment of the public, or any other infrastructure that may negatively affect the functions and functioning of the infrastructure in question. If I may pause here, Chairperson, paragraph C, the idea there is also to make sure that the infrastructure which is to be declared may cause failure or problems at another infrastructure. If I may use an example here, the Petro SA plant in Mossel Bay needs water for cooling purposes. They extract the water from the Wolvedans Dam, if I'm not mistaken. They purify the water until it is absolutely pure. It's H2O in the very sense of the word. They use that to cool the plant. They put back the impurities that are needed and pump that back in the Wolvedans Dam. Now, the impurities are necessary because pure H2O, strangely enough, is quite toxic, and large amounts could even cause a person to die simply because the water is so pure that it extracts the minerals that it needs from the bodies of the persons who take that in. So this is the type of infrastructure that could influence the infrastructure that is applied for. And this is then made one of the criteria, but it is also extracted from clause 17 in the existing BBOM. D, there are reasonable grounds to believe that the declaration as critical infrastructure will not have a significantly negative effect on the interests of the public. E, the declaration as critical infrastructure is in pursuance of an obligation under any binding international law or international instrument. This is a new insertion that was made, as I explained to the honourable members yesterday, just to make sure that we comply with international binding conventions or UN Safety Council, for instance, resolutions in terms of critical infrastructure. There are a couple of those. And then if any other criteria which may from time to time be determined by the minister by notice in the Gazette, so these will be known, and it's also after consultation with the Critical Infrastructure Council.
Maybe just on that point, just for further clarification, the issue that we also raised, I think, yesterday, previously, the issue, the whole debate about public interest. Say, for instance, there is a gate at that dam that's been illegally obtained through illegal contracts. And a member of the Mosselbaai Gazette takes a photo of that critical infrastructure. Will that person be criminal liable? Just a simple example and maybe just the implications.
See, if I... the discussion would actually be better during the discussion of Clause 26, but the simple answer to that would be no, that person will not be, in terms of the new proposed Clause 26, not be criminally liable. Right. The new Clause 17 deals with the application process. The honourable members will recall there was a graphic on the in the presentation yesterday which set out that process with the requirements and then the application, what that application must deal with. A person in control of infrastructure may, in the prescribed manner and format, lodge with a national commissioner an application to have such infrastructure declared as critical infrastructure in terms of this chapter. Subclause 2, all the information that are contained in the following paragraphs could actually have been dealt with in regulations, but we felt because it's such an important aspect, it's rather better to have it in the main act so that it's readily accessible to any person who reads the act when it is, if it is promulgated. So the information that it must be contained is A, the sector in which the primary functions of such an infrastructure take place, B, the resources available to the person in control of the infrastructure to Roman 1, safeguard such infrastructure against destruction, disruption, failure or degradation, 2, repair or replace such infrastructure including its equipment, materials or service, or 3, ensure that the infrastructure recovers from any destruction, disruption, failure or degradation. And these factors are all taken from the old clause, or the existing clause 17 rather. C, the effects of, or the risk of a destruction, disruption, failure or degradation of such infrastructure on 1, the environment, 2, the health or safety of the public or any segment of the public, 3, the Republic's ability to function, deliver public services or maintain law and order, and for any other infrastructure that may negatively affect the functions and functioning of the infrastructure in question. And members will recall that this is a criteria that must be applied, but the person in control who applies for declaration will have this type of knowledge. And this is why the information is required in the application as well. D, the size and location of any population that may be affected by the risk referred to in paragraph C. E, historic incidents of threats against the infrastructure and to destruction, failure or degradation of such infrastructure. F, the level of risk or threats to which such an infrastructure is exposed or potentially exposed. G, special characteristics or attributes of such an infrastructure to deal with any threat contemplated in paragraph F. H, the extent to which the declaration as critical infrastructure will promote the interests of the public. And I, once again, any other information which may from time to time be determined by the Minister by notice in the Gazette after consultation with the Critical Infrastructure Council. If you may move to sub-clause 3. In the event that a government department or an organ of state has functional control over the sector in which the activities of the infrastructure falls, the application must further contain A, a submission by the head of the government department or head of an organ of state who has functional control over the sector in which the activities of the infrastructure falls to support the application. Members will recall that this is extracted from the previous clause 18, I think. And B, particulars of any person other than the applicant who has a right or interest in the infrastructure in question. Any agreement with a person contemplated in paragraph 1 regarding the application for declaration as critical infrastructure. 3, a person other than the applicant who will be responsible for the costs of securing the infrastructure in question. 4, agreement with a person contemplated in paragraph 3 regarding the costs of securing the infrastructure in question. Those particulars, members will recall, are extracted from the existing clauses, but came from the submissions from Gautrain and the Reserve Bank, for instance. And then C, any other relevant information which is in the opinion of the applicant necessary for the proper consideration of the application. Subclause 4, where it appears from the application that the infrastructure contemplated in subsection 1 partly consists of, incorporates or houses any information infrastructure as contemplated in any legislation on cybersecurity, the National Commissioner must follow the procedure contemplated in section 24. And this is also extracted from the existing clauses in the people. Subject to subsection 6, the National Commissioner must, upon receipt of an application, publish a notice of the application in the Gazette, stating the name of the applicant and the address of the premises in respect of which the application is made, and 2, inviting interested persons to submit written comments in relation to the application. The National Commissioner must also, within 30 days of receipt of an application, conduct a physical security assessment of the infrastructure in order to 1, verify the information in the application, 2, assess the risk category in which such infrastructure or parts thereof may be categorized, 3, confirm whether the physical security measures proposed by the person in control of the infrastructure comply with the prescribed measures and standards for the protection of the infrastructure, 4, provide that the person in control of that infrastructure provide the person in control of that infrastructure with an opportunity to make written submissions regarding the physical security assessment which is conducted in terms of this subsection, and C, within 60 days after the physical security assessment has been conducted or the submissions contemplated in paragraph B 4 are received, whichever occurs last, submit to the Council for consideration 1, the written physical security assessment report together with the application, 2, any comments contemplated in paragraph A2, and 3, any written submissions in terms of paragraph B4 or where applicable, subsection 8. 6, in the event that the applicant shows good cause why the procedure in subsection 5A should not be followed, the National Commissioner must refer the request to the Council, who may dispense with the publication as referred to in subsection 5A after considering the factors in subsection 7. Chair, maybe if I may interrupt myself here, I noted that there is in fact an incorrect reference here in this document. So the working document that the members have, I will just request that the words in subclause 5, that paragraph 3 on the screen, that the words "or where applicable subsection 8" be removed. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mbele.
Chair, can I ask the Brigadier just to repeat that so I can find the reference? Okay, Roman numeral 3C.
Yeah, that will be in subclause 5, C, paragraph C, and then subparagraph Roman 3. And I highlighted that on the screen there, the words "or where applicable subsection 8." Because of the amendment to the section, that reference is in fact incorrect.
Thank you. Thank you, Gregory. You can continue.
Thank you. Subclause 6. In the event that the applicant shows good cause why the procedure in subsection 5A should not be followed, the National Commissioner must refer the request to the Council. That the procedure in subsection 5A, of course, is the publication of the information relating to the application. Then the National Commissioner must refer the request to the Council, who may dispense with the publication as referred to in subsection 5A after considering the factors in subsection 7. And the factors that may be or must be considered are the following. For purposes of subsections 5 and 6, the applicant must show that a departure from the procedure in subsection 5A is reasonable and justifiable in the circumstances. In other words, those must be objective factors based on facts and not perceptions, taking into account all relevant factors, including A, the objects of declaration of the objects of declaration as critical infrastructure, my apologies, B, the nature, purpose, and likely effect of the declaration as critical infrastructure, C, the nature and extent of the departure from subsection 5A. In other words, if the applicant only wants the name published and not the address or something of that sort. D, the relation between the departure and its purpose. E, the importance of the purpose of the departure. And F, the need to promote an efficient administration and good governance. These factors that are stated there are to ensure that a departure from the publication requirement is indeed constitutional, so that the departure from that process is not just on a subjective basis to say, look, I'm Chevron Oil or whatever, and I don't want my name in the Government Gazette. There are certain requirements, and those requirements are certainly to ensure that that departure is constitutional. 8. In the event that the Council decides that the process contemplated in subsection 5A must be followed, the Council must direct the National Commissioner to publish the notice in subsection 5A with directions on the information it must be contained in the notice, whereafter the National Commissioner will deal with the application. Or, B, may be departed from, the Council must direct the National Commissioner to depart from the provisions of subsection 5A and proceed to deal with the application. The National Commissioner may request the head of a government department, which is a security service established under section 199 of the Constitution, to designate a suitably experienced member of that security service to assist with the physical security assessment contemplated in subsection 5B when required. This also comes from the existing clause, and the idea is, of course, to have a member of, for instance, the State Security Agency to assist with the assessment. 10. If the infrastructure relevant to the application consists of multiple structures, services, or facilities, the person in control of those infrastructures must apply for the declaration in respect of all such infrastructure as critical infrastructure. also comes from the existing clauses. Where the National Commission is unable to comply with any of the time frames contemplated in subsection 5, the National Commissioner must, in writing, apply to the Council in the prescribed form and manner for an extension not exceeding 30 days or such other period as the Council may determine. 12, where an extension of time is granted as contemplated in subsection 11, the Council must inform the applicant referred to in 17.1 in writing of such extension. And that is clause 17.
Thanks, Chair. Just a quick question concerning clause. I keep losing my place here. I think that's sub clause 8, 8B. I might be jumping the gun because I know there's been a reconfiguration of these clauses. But could the Brigadier just indicate if we still have, and where the provision that I believe was in the last version was for a record of decision when did the deviation from subclause 5A, because we had built in that mechanism to allow recourse for any future inquiries into reasons and substance for deviation from the publication in the Gazette. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, that requirement was retained in the next clause, and the Minister must report on all these deviations in the report to Parliament, just to ensure that it is, in fact, on record. Thank you, Chair. Application for declaration as critical infrastructure and critical infrastructure complex by the National Commissioner. And this is the case where the National Commissioner is the applicant, and I think this clause was also discussed during previous sittings of the committee, and it is virtually unchanged from the previous one. Clause 18. One, where the National Commissioner identifies for possible declaration as critical infrastructure, A, infrastructure under the control of or occupied by a local or provincial government department, he or she must advise the relevant head of the department of the province or the relevant municipal manager to lodge an application in terms of section 16. This clause, or paragraph rather, was voted on during the previous session, and I think it was a direct result of the inputs given by the Western Cape government. And the words relevant head of the department in the province, the relevant municipal manager, was brought in, and the National Commissioner will only advise them to apply for declaration if they want to. B, government infrastructure, and that was the new definition that was voted on the previous occasion, he or she must lodge an application in accordance with subsection 2. Subclause 2, of course, then reads as follows, if I can get to it, where the National Commissioner makes an application for the declaration of government infrastructure as critical infrastructure, the application must, subject to subsection 3, be made in the prescribed form and manner and submitted to the Critical Infrastructure Council for consideration. Before the National Commissioner makes an application referred to in subsection 1B, the National Commissioner must A, notify the relevant head of a government department who is the person in control of the infrastructure in the prescribed form and manner of the intention of the National Commissioner, B, afford the person referred to in paragraph A an opportunity to submit written representations within 60 days on any aspect relating to the intended application of the National Commissioner. C, consider the representations referred to in paragraph B, and within 7 days of taking a decision on whether or not to proceed with the application, notify the person referred to in paragraph A in writing of such decision and his or her reasons. in the event that the National Commissioner decides to proceed with the application, he or she must ensure that the written representations referred to in 3B, as well as his or her written reasons referred to in subsection 3D, forms part of the application that is submitted to the council. Clause 19, my apologies, subclause 1. Upon receiving an application for declaration of infrastructure as critical infrastructure, the Critical Infrastructure Council must A, apply the criteria referred to in section 16.2 in order to determine whether such an application demonstrates that the infrastructure in question qualifies under 16.1 for declaration as critical infrastructure. B, consider the potential risk category of such an infrastructure, taking into account 1, the prescribed system of categorizing infrastructure in a low risk, medium risk, or high risk category; 2, the probability of failure, disruption, or destruction of the infrastructure in question or threat thereof; and 3, the impact and consequence of failure, disruption, or destruction of infrastructure or the threat thereof. And Chair, the honourable members will recall that Roman 2 and Roman 3 are basically the axis on which the risk categorisation will take place. Firstly, what is the probability of failure on a scale from, say, 1 to 5, and on a horizontal level, the impact and consequence of failure, disruption or destruction of infrastructure or threat thereof, and that will give an objective view of the possible risk categorization. Paragraph C, the council must consider the extent to which the declaration as critical infrastructure will promote the interest of the public. D, consider any prescribed guidelines for the identification and declaration of infrastructure as critical infrastructure, and then E, take into account any other criteria contemplated in section 16.2d, which are of course the criteria that the minister may declare by publication in the Gazette. The next step is in subclause 2. The Critical Infrastructure Council must, after performing the functions in subsection 1, make recommendations to the minister on A, whether or not the infrastructure in question qualifies to be declared as critical infrastructure, and B, an appropriate risk categorization for the infrastructure. Subclause 3. Before the council makes a recommendation to the minister to declare or not to declare the infrastructure as critical infrastructure, the council must A, notify the person in control of that critical infrastructure of such intended recommendation and the reasons for such recommendation, and B, afford the person in control of that infrastructure a period of no less than 30 days to make representations. 4, the council must consider any representations received in terms of subsection 3 before making a recommendation to the minister on whether or not to declare the infrastructure as critical infrastructure. Subject to subsection 3, the council must, within 7 days of its last meeting, submit the application and its recommendations to the minister for a decision within 30 days of receipt thereof. 6, where the council is unable to comply with the timeframes as contemplated in subsection 5, the council must, in writing, request the minister for an extension not exceeding 30 days or such other period as the minister may determine. And 7, where an extension of time is granted as contemplated in subsection 6, the council must inform the applicant referred to in subsection 17.1 in writing of such extension. Then we move from the Critical Infrastructure Council to the minister and the minister's powers. Clause 20, subclause 1. Subject to subsection 2, the minister may, on recommendation of the Critical Infrastructure Council, and I will once again interrupt myself here, this is a substantial change from the existing clause, the existing clause 16.1 provides that the minister may, on application by a person in control, whereas this new proposal provides that the minister may, on recommendation of the Critical Infrastructure Council. So here we are trying to make sure that the minister does not have unfettered powers, as may have been the impression with the previous 16.1, so that the critical infrastructure plays the role that it's supposed to play. And those recommendations will then be critical for the minister to make the declaration. So the minister may on declaration, may on recommendation of the Critical Infrastructure Council, A, declare infrastructure as critical infrastructure after considering, one, whether the application complies with requirements contemplated in Section 16.1. So not only must the council take into account those objective requirements, the minister must do that as well and apply his mind or her mind on the issue. Two, the recommendation of the Critical Infrastructure Council, and three, any other information which the minister deems reasonable. Once again, the word reasonable denotes objective factors that he must rely on, and appropriate. B, the minister may categorize critical infrastructure or certain parts of such critical infrastructure that is declared in terms of paragraph A in either a low risk, medium risk, or high risk category as may be prescribed. And the honorable members will recall that the words "or certain parts of such critical infrastructure" was voted on in the previous meeting to distinguish between, for instance, the land side and the air side parts of the airport, and also the public and the non-public parts of, for instance, Parliament. If we go on to paragraph C, where it is necessary to achieve the objects of this Act, determine that critical infrastructure is part of a critical infrastructure complex, and D, impose such conditions as may be prescribed regarding any steps and measures the person in control of the critical infrastructure must implement to safeguard the critical infrastructure in question. The next step for the minister: the minister must notify the council, the national commissioner, and the person in control of that critical infrastructure of A, the declaration of the infrastructure as critical infrastructure, B, the risk category of such declaration, C, the conditions contemplated in subsection 1D, D, any implications of the Income Tax Act 1962. Those implications would would be that the security measures of critical infrastructure, the costs thereof, may have an effect on deductions that such a company may make during their tax calculations. And E, the period within which the person in control of that critical infrastructure must take the steps contemplated in Section 24.1. Subclause 3, when infrastructure has been declared as critical infrastructure, the minister may, in consultation with the person in control of the infrastructure, taking into account the probability of compromising the security of the critical infrastructure in question, determine that the publication of information regarding some security measures which must be implemented at such critical infrastructure be restricted. The subclause also comes from the previous clause 20, or the existing clause 20 rather. 4, the minister must, in consultation with a cabinet member responsible for state security, determine the procedure that the national commissioner and the state security agency must follow when dealing with an application contemplated in section 17.4. That application, of course, is an application that deals with critical information infrastructure that is housed in physical infrastructure, which would fall under the legislation for relating to cybersecurity. 5, when an application contemplated in Section 17.4 is referred to the cabinet member responsible for state security, In terms of any legislation on cybersecurity, the cabinet member responsible for state security must, within 60 days or such further period as agreed upon between the ministers, decide whether the infrastructure in question or any part thereof must be dealt with in terms of any legislation on cybersecurity or not, and inform the minister in writing of the decision. The legislation on cybersecurity, the bill is still with a Justice Committee, I believe, and I think they are busy working on that. Subclause 6, where the Cabinet Minister responsible for state security decides that an application must not be dealt with in terms of legislation on cybersecurity, the Cabinet Member responsible for state security must return the application to the Minister, whereafter the application must be dealt with in terms of this Act, in other words, follow the normal procedures.
16 and 20, questions, responses, Honourable Kadabana, Honourable Mbele.
Thank you, Chair. going through this carefully as we are, perhaps I've missed it, or maybe it's something we've not contemplated before, but where is the appeal mechanism? If the National Police Commission instructs that infrastructure falling under a local or provincial government department must be declared, and the way it's phrased, it's as though the National Police Commissioner instructs the province or the local government to declare something to be critical infrastructure, and with it all the expenses that would incur, and they disagree. what do they do? What would be the procedure for them to lodge a dispute, disagreement with what the National Police Commissioner has determined, or if it is a determination by the minister and the person who owns it or the entity it falls under or the province it falls in disagrees with the minister's declaration, where is the appeal mechanism that they can go to say, actually, we disagree with this determination?
Thank you, Honourable Kadabana. Honourable Bede.
Thank you, Chair. The Brigadier must please forgive me if I'm being a bit slow this morning. But I struggled to identify where that record of decision provision was that indicated wasn't coming clauses, unless it's not these clauses that we're reviewing. I don't have my previous documents from last time. I wish I did, actually, because I remember there was very specific wording that was inserted, and I'm not seeing it. Sorry. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Markey, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to clarify one or two things. I think the first one is the one that was asked by Honorable Colabar. The question would be, that's where the National Commissioner identifies and wants to declare. And then it's 18.1A says you must advise the relevant head of department or government infrastructure to lodge an application. Just to clarify myself, if there's a disagreement on that, does it mean that the National Commissioner is asking or is just saying you must fill in this form so that I can submit it? Meaning that if the municipal manager is not in agreement, what happens there? And the The second question would be 21. I remember we talked about this, but I seem to have forgotten. It is saying the minister may. I remember we talked about may and must. May on recommendation. Does that mean that the minister can decide otherwise? Does the may refer to that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Marky. Thank you, members. We will give an opportunity to the Brigadier to respond to those questions. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chair. The question relating to the appeals mechanism, I will just go through Clause 18.1 again. Clause 18.1A refers to infrastructure under control of a local or provincial government department. In those cases, the National Commissioner must advise the relevant department. Listen, guys, you comply with all the requirements in 16, and we advise you to apply for declaration. So this is not an instruction, it's merely advice, simply because the National Commissioner believes that that specific infrastructure may be complying with requirements in 16.1. And a typical example of that would be, for instance, a provincial legislature, where the administration of the provincial legislature doesn't apply for declaration. The National Commissioner can write a letter and say, please, I refer you to Clause 16.1, and you are being advised to apply. So that's definitely not an instruction. And therefore, consequently, there are no appeal mechanisms. But related to that, when we go to the government infrastructure, the paragraph B, there was a definition inserted after the previous meeting in the B bill, and I'll read it for the convenience of the members. Government infrastructure for the purposes of Section 9.4 and Section 19, these references have, of course, changed, means infrastructure controlled, owned, occupied, or possessed by a government department in the national sphere and in respect of whose operational administration that department is responsible. So this only refers, the paragraph B only refers to government infrastructure in the national sphere, where the National Commissioner may apply on behalf. But in most of those cases, it will also follow a process of advising. This is the current practice. The National Commissioner or the persons in charge of the administration thereof would approach, say, the Department of, say, Mineral Affairs to say it's required possibly to declare this and this and this as national key points. This is the current practice, and then those departments normally comply with that. But if they drag their feet, the National Commissioner may then apply on their behalf, simply because it's also of national importance that those identified infrastructures are applied for. To give you an example, if the Secretary of Parliament does not apply for declaration of Parliament as critical infrastructure, the National Commissioner should at least be in a position to say, you are taking too long, let's do this application on your behalf. But there is a consultation process also built into the clause, in sub-clause 3, because that head of the department is notified and afforded an opportunity to submit written reasons, written representations rather, within 60 days. So I think that clause on the government infrastructure is just a safety net to make sure that those government infrastructures that comply or with the requirements of clause, the proposed clause 16.1, do get declared at some point. But A, definitely, as a a result of the inputs by the Western Cape government, there is just an advisory capacity that the National Commissioner will fulfill there, and there will certainly not be an instruction or any manner of force applied to those infrastructures. With regards to the...
Chairperson?
Honourable Markey?
I don't think my question is answered. The question is, can the National Commissioner override whatever, I mean, yeah, if maybe local or provincial governments don't want to do that for any reason of their own, can the National Commissioner say in the interest of the public and national security and whatever, I'm applying whether you want it or not? That's my question.
Okay, it's been there.
Yes, thank you, Chair. The National Commissioner will certainly not be in a position to override a provincial or local decision not to apply. In the previous version of the bill, the A bill, the National Commissioner had those powers, but I think the committee, because of the inputs that were received, also from other bodies, of course, the power of the National Commissioner was limited as a result of that. So the National Commissioner will definitely not be able to override a decision of a province or a local government not to apply.
Sir, then who can do that? Can the council do that?
Yes, the council or the provincial government will then have to make the decision whether to apply or not. So the council, I suppose, would be able to take that decision and say, yes, we want to apply. But the National Commissioner will not be in a position to, because of the structure of the Constitution, will not be in a position to say, you must apply. And this, of course, it's a national function. If, for instance, it's the some or other dam which falls under the control of a national department, that the National Commissioner will be able to interact there and apply on behalf of the National Department of Water Affairs, who are responsible for the dams. Thank you. And then, just with regards to the Honourable Mbele's question, I apologize, sir, that I didn't answer it off immediately, but because I couldn't remember the clause offhand, but that's contained in clause 15, where the minister has to report to Parliament.
Responses. Honourable Karabana. Remember, we just want to ensure that 16 to 20 is covered. And I mean,
no, I
think we already dealt with that clause, but I mean, we can,
Okay, yes, that specific provision is in clause 27, sub 5. The minister must table the regulations for scrutiny and not only for rubber stamping. 27, sub clause 5.
Colleagues, if there's nothing, is on the market.
Yeah, Chairperson, 21, It says the minister may. I think I asked that question.
Yes.
And still, Chairperson, not to take you back, I'm not sure whether, how did we deal with this? That the province can decide not to apply if that is a critical infrastructure. I remember we said something about it. Not that they, can they refuse, or we don't want to declare this critical infrastructure. I can't remember what we said about it, but there must be somebody who can say this is a critical infrastructure. And the answer was, the brigadier said, maybe the council can do it. It was not very, very clear. At least we must clarify that, or it can a municipal manager say, no, I don't, I just want to clarify that one.
That one will mark it?
Yes,
we'll give an opportunity again to the Brigadier and the team.
Yes.
Also other members of the team.
Very welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, if, for instance, a province or a council decides not to declare, the proper procedure is contained in the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, where that type of interaction between the various spheres of government can take place. So the minister will still be in a position to ensure that if it is really critical infrastructure that complies with the requirements in 16.1, to take it up through the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. And there are other options, of course, also, but I don't think legal action will be appropriate for the minister, but there are other ways also to ensure that it is declared. Because I'm sure the provinces, I think the main advantage of having this declared a critical infrastructure is that there is a structured security approach that attaches to a critical infrastructure. So most provincial governments and local governments will really grasp at the opportunity to have it declared as critical infrastructure instead of not doing that.
Brigadier, maybe a question from my side, then I'll go to the two colleagues. Maybe the example and the question also with relation to the Honourable Market Post. Say, for instance, there's a situation, say there is a dam in Matatiel, and the municipal manager doesn't want to apply, but it's in the national interest due to hydrological reasons or electricity and so on. What options is available then to ensure that in terms of the current framework that it ends up at the critical infrastructure? That will be my question. Honourable Bailey and then Honourable Colibana.
Thank you, Sheikh. It's not a question. It's an input, if I may shed some light on the discussion around different spheres and whether or not something is being compromised should things go a certain way. Because there's actually a flip side to this, and it might perhaps give Honourable Marcus some peace of mind. And I'm just going to speak from direct experience. So, for example, the Western Cape Provincial Administration Building, which also contains the Provincial Parliament, finds that the fact of being a National Key Point Act and therefore having SAPS PSS personnel stationed there is inadequate to their needs and their requirements. I remember when there was the spate of poo protests around 2013-2014, when that first one happened, my office was directly above the entrance, and I watched it happen. When people started throwing feces in the entrance and in the hallway, the police officers retreated inside the building. Right, they did not respond and actually play the role of securing or responding effectively to the incidents. So the position of the provincial governments is that they would like to procure their own security services who will operate and be trained at a higher level and have higher specialization than is currently provided for if it's just done through the National Key Point Act and it being SEB's PSS officers. So you might find that there are instances where a local or provincial government does not want to go this route because they would like to go further and do a specialization that they cannot trust will happen if they're simply handed over to another role player. So there's actually two sides to this, and I think that kind of gives a fuller picture of the kind of dynamics that can be at play. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm interested in the situation where you have the current list of national key points, which would obviously fall away, and you start again afresh with the declarations of the critical infrastructure. Now, if the security around a particular some ministerial house, wherever, falls away under that, the National Key Points Act, and it takes 6 months for somebody to get round to declaring it, there is no security around that home in the interim because they are no longer a National Key Point. And it may take months for the admin to catch up. On conversely, there may be a lot of discussion about the declaration of certain entities that the feeling is they shouldn't be declared critical infrastructure. That's a whole other debate that could go on. So the interface between the one and the other in terms of a transition is going to be quite a tightrope walk, frankly. And I think there will be a great deal of discussion about it because I'm quite sure in my own mind that there will be moves to have certain entities declared, which, frankly, with this bill cannot be.
Thank you, members. We'll give an opportunity to the Brigadier also speak to the transitional arrangements in the Act.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, my apologies to Honourable Markey for ducking and diving that question that he posed. It was not intentional. 21, where the minister may declare on recommendation of the council, the idea was that the minister must consider the recommendation of the council, not necessarily the application only. The minister must apply his or her mind, and after that, the minister must make up his or her own mind and declare. So the minister can declare, or the minister can refuse to declare. If the minister refuses to declare, there are other processes in other legislation that can be taken, or of course, in terms of the common law, administrative law, to go to a court to have that reviewed, etc., etc. But there are safety nets if the minister incorrectly decides not to declare infrastructure. And that is the reason why there is a discretion built in there. If there is no discretion built in there, we can actually have the Critical Infrastructure Council then declare, because then there is no discretion for the political head of that. With regards to the example of the dam, say, with all due respect, that's not a good example, because the dams all fall under the National Department of Water Affairs. But if there is a
municipal dam,
they also fall under the control of Water Affairs. But if there's a, for instance, and I think this is one of the reasons why we get so many local protests with the purification works at the municipalities. If, for instance, that person decides not to declare the purification works as critical infrastructure and a big segment of the population of that town or suffer without water, National Commissioner can advise. If they don't do it, then this intergovernmental relations framework can still come into play where there is pressure on the municipal manager or council at least to apply for declaration. The issue, of course, is that the constitution distinguishes between legislative competences in the provinces and the local spheres of government, and the intergovernmental relations framework is specifically enacted to regulate that relationship. Right. With regards to the example by Honorable Mbele about the SAPs that provided inadequate protection, if you have regard to Clause 24.3 of the bill, and for ease of reference, I will read it, where the government department or organ of state referred to in subsection 2, and that's, of course, the person who then has a declaration, is unable to protect the critical infrastructure as contemplated in subsection 2 within their own means, of course. The person in control of that critical infrastructure must take steps to ensure that the security service provider is appointed to protect the critical infrastructure. And then, of course, provided that they must be vetted, etc., etc. But even government departments will have much more freedom in appointing security service providers to protect the infrastructure. Yes, with regards to the current national key points, the transitional arrangements in Clause 30 provide for that, where the current national key points will be deemed critical infrastructure. In other words, they will also be subject to the same rules in terms of the provision of security, etc., but they will be reviewed over a period of 48 months to make sure that they comply with the requirements of section, or clause rather, 16.1 and 2. In other words, if, for instance, to use a very bad example, if a minister's house is declared a national key point, there will be an assessment, but that house must then comply with the requirements of 16.1 and 2. And I personally doubt that a minister's house would comply with those, and therefore will be declassified as a national key point, but not become critical infrastructure. Yeah, I think those are the questions.
Okay. Chapter 10. I don't know why I belabor this point. Because maybe I'm foreseeing some problems. It wouldn't be legally correct to add something like failure which in an act or the relevant municipal manager to lodge an application in terms of section 16. Failure which, in the right legal terms, or failure which the intergovernmental whatever will kick in. Because according to me, it's open, and the process might take a very long time just because somebody is being unreasonable. Especially if we check in provinces where it's a different party that is in power, like Cape Town. So I'm not very sure whether it's legal to say, even if they can negotiate according to the intergovernmental whatever and the constitution, would it be wrong to put some clause there that explains what would happen, or would that come under regulations or something? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Malki, thank you. Honourable Karabana.
Just looking at the composition of the council, where you've got seven heads of departments and five from civil society. So if anything goes to a vote, it's going the way of the government decision. And if the minister determines that his house, private house on Brighton Beach, must get security guards and all the bells and whistles provided by what was a national key point and now critical infrastructure, the chances... Sorry, just waiting. I know you need stuff. In my mind, the chances that any government employee will go against what the minister wants and say, actually, your house does not fall in with this. It's zero. Zero. And so the minister will get his way. He will declare all the private homes that are currently national key points to still be the equivalent of. They will have all the bells and whistles and the guards and the security and everything for their private residences. They will do security upgrades at the taxpayer's expense. Even though it's very carefully worded to say they should be excluded. But this board is advising the minister, and in any case, the minister can make up his own mind and disregard what the board has to say in terms of input. And I can see that people will be challenging this and the decisions if they go that route, and knowing politicians, I believe they will. I believe this is going to end up in court over and over and over again by various civil society entities, because sure as nuts, and I mean the elephant in the room is Nkandla, sure as nuts that will be declared to be critical to whoever. I don't know who it's critical for, certainly no one other than the family who lives in it, but it will be.
Thank you, members. We want to dispose of 16 to 20 because we want to take a tea break before we go after tea to the next chapter. But, Brigadier, please respond.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's important to remember in these cases, and to some extent it also answers Honourable Marquez's question about this recalcitrant municipal manager fearing that it may eat into his budget to have those security guards. I think it's a very valid question. But all of these decisions that are taken, whether it's by the minister, whether it's by the council, the provincial legislature, or the provincial department, or a municipal council, all of them are administrative administrative decisions and therefore reviewable. And although one cannot legislate for failure of an official to do his or her duty, and in my personal view that should not be done either, there are safety nets. If such a manager does not comply and it creates a major crisis, if for instance the metropoles that receive the electricity from Eskom but then distributes it by themselves, that is typically something that if they do not want to apply for that, I'm absolutely certain that an application to review that decision will either be successful if it complies with Section 16, 1 and 2 or not, but those decisions are reviewable. And it's the same instance where the council, although its membership may be perceived to be loaded in terms of the state, those departments are critical for the decisions that need to be taken. But even the council decisions can be taken on review. And I think we've seen time and time again that our judiciary lays down the rules for this type of administrative decision, which actually shapes the type of decision that will be taken in future. So it's virtually impossible to legislate for those events. But if the general principles are contained in the legislation and they are constitutionally pure, my view is that the bill provides a good platform for constitutional decisions. If there are bad decisions, they can be taken on review.
Thank you very much, members. We have completed 16 to 20. Of course, we won't vote for that. We'll wait for our quorum and also for the conclusion of the other chapters. So, members, we'll take a 10-minute tea break. Then we'll come back to deal with the other section that we need to deal with, the chapter that's still outstanding. Thank you. 10 minutes.
Yeah, the one.